Welcome to the Infinite Lives and Games podcast. I'm your host, Victor Diaz, also known by my gamer tag as Seth Infinite. Today is a very special day as we kick off season 3 of the podcast. If you are just joining us here for the first time, you can go check us out across the whole social media landscape as Infinite Lives and Games, except the Twitch, which is twitch.tv/SethInfinite. Here on Infinite Lives and Games, we talk about people's lives, your lives, as we live them and are inspired and changed by the awesome games we play. Season 2 was so much fun. We had some phenomenal episodes, including one of the video games, Dead Space, and the topic of a career in theater with my guy Jake, a powerful episode on music and video games with the legendary musician Lenny J, and a solo episode by yours truly, putting out some things I have learned doing this podcast for a year and celebrating the whole thing. Make sure to check out these episodes if you haven't and leave an awesome rating and review. As well as consider subscribing to help and grow the podcast on the Anchor website, which hosts my podcast at anchor.fm/Victor-Diaz34. Subscribers will unlock bonus content and you guys can help donate to charities for homelessness. All the information will be in the show notes below. And last but not least, before we officially begin this episode, I want to thank all the day ones, all the subscribers, all the followers of the Infinite Lives and Games podcast, because we are changing, encouraging people's lives together. Without you guys, this show wouldn't be a thing. We are keeping each other healthy, safe, and of course, infinite. On today's show, we have James Daniello, born and raised in New York, 37 years old, who is a lead engineer in game design. Now, the reason why this episode is so special and why we're starting off season 3 with this episode is because at one point in our time, you know, a lot of us, most of us are gamers here on this show and podcast. We thought about being a game designer. We thought about going into designing our own games and going into the background for what it is to create and put out our favorite things into this world. And one of those things was putting out video games. So now today we have an awesome and special guest I met not too long ago, and we get to dive deep into what it's like to create and be in the background of game designs, which is so freaking awesome. Some topics to be discussed include game design, mobile games versus console games, shipping games, and of course, what gaming means to us. James, good sir, thank you so much for being on the podcast here today. It is an absolute honor, and it is a special episode. How you doing today, man?
Good. I'm excited. This should be fun.
Oh, this is going to be mega fun. I mean, a lot of people have really always thought about game design. Granted, over the years, you grow up and you get out of it, but not you, man. And we're gonna get into it. I can't wait. We're going to start off today, basically, as we start off with every episode, we're going to get a background story and, of course, our guest as he goes through his history and why he chose video game design as his career and where he started in video games. So if you want to give us a little bit of history of, like, you know, where you started with games, what got you into games, what was your first games, give us all the good stuff, man.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've talked about this a few times, so this information's in my head. I can do this. I remember some of my first experiences was, I don't know, I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, and my dad had an NES. This was in like 1992. My dad got like the regular Nintendo from like 1985, and it had Super Mario 3 on it. And I remember playing Super Mario 3 on like a little tiny black and white TV. Like way back in the day, like TVs were expensive, and all you get was like a crappy little tiny screen that's black and white, and the TV itself was massive.
Oh, it was like, huge.
You know, yeah, I remember like being on the carpet, you know, looking up at this like wooden cart that had this like big, huge TV on it with a tiny black and white screen. And I'm playing Super Mario 3 on it, you know, on like an old school Nintendo. And I got a little older. One of my cousins got me like a Super Nintendo with like Mario All-Stars. My brother was a little older and I got him into, you know, video games. And they were just always there, always in the background.
Yeah, Mario All-Stars had like all the classic Marios, right? Like Mario 1, 2.
Yeah, including Mario 3. And they were, like, updated for, like, the Super Nintendo, so they looked nice. And I think it was the first time the Lost Levels came to the
Good point. Yeah, absolutely.
And I played all sorts of awesome games. I remember playing, like, Link to the Past. That was, like, one of my favorite games. Like, one summer when I was, like, 9 years old, You know, I remember some kid wanted me to go mini golfing with him, and I had just gotten like Link to the Past, and I was torn between, do I want to go out and like have fun
Mini.
in the beautiful summer and go
Oh.
play, or do I want to stay here and keep getting through this dungeon? And like, so they're always like, you know, a huge part of my life. But you know, at that point, I definitely didn't consider like, oh, I want to make video games for a living. I was just a kid playing video games,
Right.
right? We moved a lot when I was a kid too. You know, we went to different towns every couple of years, you know, and in between, I think 9th and 10th grade, I was what is that? It must be like 15 or something, right? This is like 1999 or
Math,
something.
yeah.
In between like 9th and 10th grade, I moved. So I moved to like a new town right when summer started. And so that summer, like I was in a new town and had no friends, right? So like, what do? You didn't make any friends because you didn't go to school yet. After moving, my like this was 1999, and like computers were hard to come by,
Those were
and
also
my
massive
uncle.
too.
Yeah, those were also massive. I remember it was like $1,000 for like a garbage E machines computer, and it would like break after a year, you
Oh
know,
my
because it was made with the
God.
cheapest parts, and it still like couldn't run anything.
How far we've come.
But my uncle had given me like a computer. I had a spare one or something. So fortunately, that summer when I had no friends, I'd also gotten like an older computer. My friend that I'd known from, you know, I just moved away from, his grandma, like I was able to use her AOL, like America Online, to go online, even though I didn't have or couldn't afford like the internet at the time.
You're throwing it back,
So
man. AOL.
well, yeah, I mean, you want the story, and this is all kind of related. I'm getting there, trust me.
No, you good. Keep going, man. You good.
So that summer, you know, I had no friends. I moved to a new place. I loved video games. I had this computer and access to the internet, and this was like the Wild West burgeoning internet, right?
Oh my God.
But there were free games you could download, right? So I'm like, I'm gonna go find some games to play or something. And I found a couple. So I was like playing games on the computer that summer. And I found one that had like at the end of it had an advertisement for the game maker that it was made with. It was like, you know, made with click and play, I think it was called. I'm like, wait, that guy made this game with like a tool to make games. I'm like, I can make games too, right?
Interesting,
This is like,
yeah.
yeah, this is like my 14 or 15-year-old self, you know? So I
Wait.
download the
So that
software.
advertisement came after you beat the game or like after you
After
played
you
it?
like closed it, every time you closed the game, yeah. It
Oh,
was like the
smart.
free version of the game making software that the limitation was you had the advertisement at the end. And if you paid for the premium version, didn't have the advertisement or whatever. So because this
Got
guy made a
you.
pretty good game using the free version of the software that I downloaded and I thought was awesome, I was like, I can make games too. So I followed that advertisement for the game making software, and it was like logic based. It wasn't like programming. It was like you could click through and do all sorts of stuff in the program itself without knowing how to
Right.
code, but it was going to be limited, somewhat limited. And downloaded it, and I started making my own games that summer, you know?
No
And
way.
yeah, and I wanted music, so I downloaded, you know, Fruity Loops at the time, which is FL Studio. So, you know, so I started learning how to do music stuff on my computers when I was 14 or 15 years old. I think I even, you know, I don't remember if I paid for it or used demos or what at the
Let's
time, because I was like a
go.
15-year-old kid. And so I started on that path, right? And I got familiar with logic of making games. I got comfortable with the fact that I could make something. It could be shit, it could be great, but I made it, and you know, and
That's
it's like just
right.
becoming familiar with and liking all that stuff and really diving into it when you're so young. It becomes like something you do for fun. It becomes part of like the way you view the world and stuff. And before you know, you're trying to figure out what do you want to do later in life, you know, and you really like video games, and you kind of actually have this skill set that lines up with making video games. It happens to be that if you do programming, you know, you're going to end up with like a decent career. So it kind of all like kind of built into this, like, yeah, you
That's
know,
crazy.
later in life, I like sick of high school and college. I took a break before going back to school. I worked retail jobs and stuff. I wasn't into making video games. I was into hanging out and stuff. And I realized, you know, working in delis, I'm like, I'm not going to do this for the rest of my life. This is going to suck. I don't want to be, you know, retail. What should I do with my life, you know? And then it's like clicking on me. I'm like, I actually made like games when I was 15. In high school, I took a, you know, a basic programming class, but I aced it because I already knew all the skills. Like if I went to school for like programming, I'd already have a leg up, you know, and I
Oh
can go and
man,
make video games, which
that's
is actually
right.
what I would love to do. Video games have been so important to me, and I can do that, and that can be the thing that I do, you know, meaning sort of into the world. You know,
Absolutely.
ultimately got, you know, a quick version, ultimately landed a job in video games that I wanted to do, and it's all there's the beginning and end version, right?
Oof. Oh wait, hold on. Okay, let's stick on that for a moment there. The topic of kind of started when you were younger, right? And then, because a lot of us, we don't realize this when we're younger, but when we get older, we realize it, that like the thing we are ultimately are going to do in this world, we have been doing it since we were younger, since we were kids. And we don't realize it until we grow up. So, you know, like a lot of people that become like, you know, president or, you know, something like that, that work for the office and stuff like that, like they were in that student body president in school. They were doing something that pulled them in that direction.
Right. Like they developed like the, somehow by chance or the way they grew up, the skills to like be that anyway. Right. Like through their interactions with their family. Right. There's always some sort of, is that kind of what you're getting at?
Like, no. Absolutely. There's always like things in your life that puts you in the direction where you ultimately land. And then it's so crazy how like one little ad from, do you even know this guy's name?
I do. This game, this particular game was inspirational to me, you know?
That's crazy.
It felt amateur, but it felt complete, and I liked playing it, and it felt within reach. It was like, it was the perfect goal for me to attain, and then afterwards, like, we'll do it yourself, it said, you know?
Yeah!
And I was like, yeah.
Oh,
I was like, that sounds like something fun and awesome to do, and I can make my own. I can make stuff move around on the screen, you know? Oh. And I made all of these different projects, toying around, you know, making like a game where you're sliding around like a tank thing and shooting up at aliens, or like a game where you're like the game that I had played where you're running around and it's like a Robotron. You're shooting all these guys coming in different waves. And I actually finished like 3 or 4 games.
It was a weekend. I made a Tetris clone. Stuff that you did.
It was my challenge. Yeah, somebody was like, you know, making a Tetris clone and the game maker's hard. So I'm like, I'm going to do it. Here's another point, too. I didn't do this alone. I actually found like a game making community based around that software. It's how I met one of my best friends that I still talk to today.
I
spent more time talking to him that summer than anyone else because I hadn't even gone to school yet and made friends.
Yeah,
and I still talk to him to this day.
Oh, man. Shout out to your friend, bro. That's really awesome. That's how you make friends.
Yeah, for sure.
Lifelong friends and doing all that stuff. Oh, my gosh. What? Here's the thing, too. When you are describing your job to people, right, how do you describe it? like if you're at a party and you say, oh, I'm a game designer.
Okay. Well, first of all, game designer is actually a more specific role than I am. I'm a game developer.
Okay.
But more particularly, I'm like a programmer. I'm like a software engineer. My training is actually in, like at school, software engineering. And I've worked for companies doing mobile software and web development and stuff. So I can go do any programming job, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But my whole life was spent not so much designing games, like what they should be, but more like engineering them, programming them, making them work. Trying to build technology and like game engines and like make stuff move interestingly. Make it so there can be a lot of things on a screen and it doesn't slow down, or do interesting stuff with like graphics or 3D, but it's all the technical side of things. It's not like the, you know, game design more specifically would be the guy who's like, or girl, you know, being like, right. I want to make a game about a cat and the cat has to like solve these puzzles using like yarn and they're going to be like this. And it's more about like the game, the mechanics of the game and how it works and what players do. And that's more the design.
Gotcha.
As engineering, I do more of the building, and most of the time, I do the building of the designs that designers make. More like I'm beholden to the designs that they create.
Right. So can you give like a perfect example, like a little example of a game or something like that, like in a game?
Like
the leaves moving or something like that, or the NPCs?
Yeah, I actually like to say that making games is three, or well, maybe four disciplines, but it's mostly three. It's engineering, which is making the game work. Is design, which is what should the game be, and it's like art is like what the game should look like, and together they're like feeding into each other, telling each other what to do until they make a game, right?
Nice.
Okay. My job would be like, you know, a game designer says, we're gonna make this feature that when the game, you know, the game, let's say, is like a match 3 game, right? You know, like you have to match stuff on a board. It's a mobile game, probably the most popular style of mobile games ever, right?
Gotcha.
Let's say we have a match 3 game. A designer might be like, in the match 3 game, we want it so that when you collect 5 of these blue things, a bar goes up. And when the bar fills up, a new screen pops up and it gives the player a reward. And when they match the blue things, they're going to explode and they're going to cause the red things to do this. They're like, they're just designing with, you know, what would a game be if you had no technical skill? What would a game be if, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
Like, what would you want the experience to be? And then they come to me with like a document that describes all that stuff. And I read the document and I go, okay, now I'm going to make it do that thing. And I'm going to ask you the questions that are open-ended still, or the things I need to know to make it the best that I possibly can.
So you're the guy that's making like the blue bar go up and that the thing happens.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm putting the screen into the game. I'm making sure the screen does and says what they want. And I'm making sure when you click it, it closes properly. And I'm making sure that the motion's really nice. And, nice. Oh, you're going to need this way to set it up and configure it behind the scenes so I don't need to touch it later. So I'm going to build a system so you can go in and just edit some files, and then it changes the game. And that, that's the stuff I do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, this is getting exciting. I need to ask a question, a very important question too. So like,
yeah.
Now that you're getting into the nitty-gritty of it, what are like the essentials tools to your trade, right? Like obviously you need a computer. Do you know any of the programs that you could spit out? Maybe even some of the classes and stuff that you have taken during your education into this career. Can you talk a little bit about that stuff?
Sure. I don't even know where to begin there. Let me think about this for a second. I mean, are you saying like, so if I was doing my job now, what kind of stuff would I, like what software would I use? What kind of skills did I learn?
Yeah. And what, yeah, exactly. All right. Let's start there because there's two questions there, right? It's education and your tools. So let's talk about your tools, right? What do you use on a daily basis? What do you have to, how do you have to think when you are working?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's two ways I can answer that. One is like as a game engineer in general, right? Mm-hmm. The other, like on paper, the other is like what it is actually like and what it ends up being. And especially working maybe for smaller companies like I do, or mobile game companies, something where we iterate quickly, right?
Yeah.
It ends up being a little different than on paper. On paper, I went to school for software engineering or computer science, technically computer science with a concentration in artificial intelligence in my undergrad. And I'm in a graduate program right now I'm wrapping up, which is a master's of computer science with a specialization in computing systems. Dope. And that's from Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
So I'm on paper, I am an academic computer scientist / software engineer, and I can apply the foundations and fundamentals I learned to any field. It could be, you know, I could build software for medicine.
Gotcha. So you have like
Department
an umbrella.
Of Defense, or for health, or for finance, just websites. Like I can build apps, but I chose particularly to focus on games. As a computer scientist, mm-hmm. it's a hugely broad field. You can focus on networking, you can focus on AI, you can focus on hardware optimization, you can focus on so many different things, right? And for me, it was, I wanted to make video games, and particularly I wanted to make game engines, and I wanted to make game systems, and I just did that my whole life for fun. So I got good at programming in general, but I also got particularly good at my one specialization and went into that career. Yeah. So that's like the academic side. If you do that, you're gonna get a job in programming, and probably a job in game programming, if that's what you want, especially if you do decently, right? On paper, for a while, I was just a regular software engineer. Then for a while, I became a senior software engineer, which means people could rely on me. They knew that I was experienced. I can get most things done, and I could be self-sufficient and even guide and run parts of the project myself, right? Right now, I'm a lead engineer, which is more of, I'm working with the other departments and teams to figure out what it is we need to build, how we're going to delegate time and focus, and what we're going to focus on. A lot of planning and stuff, and a little less of the engineering side itself, and with the goal of working towards creating and developing a really good engineered project that helps this thing succeed, if that makes sense. And it changes. Right? Throughout the years, I've had to do audio work. I often am opening up image manipulation software and doing some of that stuff to make, to get my task done and to, you know, to fill in gaps and stuff, right? So like high level, does that kind of...
No, you're on it.
Yeah, as an engineer, that's what I would do, right? And as an artist, they wouldn't be doing any of this. They would have spent their career, you know, drawing, creating modeling, learning how to use software that makes games but do the art in it. And the designers would have spent their time, I guess, studying games, economics.
And they have totally different things that they do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And
exactly. It's very collaborative too. Right. If you're going to be any of these fields, you have to have a little understanding of the other ones, be able to reach in. And every once in a while, I do game design. I do the art. I do the audio. I know how to do those basic enough to fill in the gaps. But my main job is the engineering part.
That is dope. So basically, as a lead engineer, are you managing your team or like a group of people?
Yes. Oh. Yes. Me and the other leads and the production side of things work together to decide this is where the project is going. These are the needs that we have. And then we have people that aren't the leads. And we have to get the whole machine running, basically.
Holy heck, man. You got a lot of stuff going on, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, after I've been doing software engineering for 10 years, you know, and I've been doing games for, I don't know, say 8 or 7, right? So it's a lot of the times the things that come up, I'm like, I already just know how to do the thing. So people rely and trust in me because I've been doing it for a long time. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. That makes sense.
Yeah, you have the experience in the background in it.
Yeah. So it's not so overwhelming. It's not like I'm jumping in, this is the first time I'm doing it, and I'm underwater. You know, a lot of it comes with you just keep going, and you find yourself knowing more, and you end up having to, in some ways, work less to achieve more. You know, so right. you don't burn yourself out as much, and you can just apply the things you know.
And, hey man, that's how it is.
That's with any field.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you want to get to that but point.
I can talk a little bit too about, if you want, which is the other part of your question, like what I do on a day-to-day basis, what software I use and stuff.
Absolutely. Let's hear it on a day-to-day. What do you do on
it? I didn't answer that part.
No, yeah. Go ahead. Right? Go for it.
Okay. So, I mean, as a game engineer, as a lead engineer, as a software engineer, as any of it, I spend a lot of time like on Slack, especially because things are remote, talking to people. We use Jira a lot, which is like, it's like a system for knowing all the tasks that you need to do for your project and assigning them to people. And when they're done, you check them off and you send them to QA to test. So we use like software called Jira, a lot of ticket management. You know, that's how we keep on track of things. You know, Google Calendar, you know, that's all like organization stuff, right?
Yeah, but there are tools. There are things
I spend a lot of time in those things. Yeah. And then I spend a lot of time in Unity. Right. Our company uses Unity. It's a game engine to make games. So I'm in there constantly writing code, and I'm doing that in C#, which is the main language that I use. Mm-hmm. Done a bunch of different languages throughout my career. And I use a software called Writer, which is like a software for writing C#, and it helps you like fill in stuff automatically. It makes your life easier. This is similar to Visual Studio. And then I use GIMP, which is image manipulation program. I have that open all the time because I'm like resizing textures, even though I'm an engineer.
Do you work mostly remote or do you go into office? Because, you know, ever since recently with all that stuff.
Yeah. My new job is remote that I started about a year ago. And I've not been inside the office yet.
When it comes to shipping this stuff out, when it comes to finishing a project, I wanted to get into that too. When it comes to getting it out into specific audience and the specific people that you're going to sell this game. So like, what does it take? What is that whole process of finishing a project as a game developer?
Good question. I can answer that a few different ways. It takes a huge team effort, mm-hmm. right? It's going to be very difficult with no experience to do it alone. It takes cutting out stuff that you want, right? Yeah. You'll never get it done if you put every single thing you want into your game. It takes committing to it, being like, this is our deadline and we're going to get the thing done. You know, art, like a painting, you could polish it forever, but that means you'll never ship the thing. So I think you have to have the mentality of like
just
getting it done.
That's a great way to put it.
And when you work in the industry itself and you're working for a company, I think the big topic people talk about is crunch. Sometimes it can be pushing a thing out, so you got to work extra. But if I'm going to hit that real quick, because it's a topic that's been around for a while, I don't think it's how it used to be. I think crunching used to be more ubiquitous and acceptable. And I think, especially maybe in mobile gaming, you know, the companies I've worked for, I've never had to crunch. And I've shipped 4 to 6 games reached by tens of millions of people, uh-huh. right? So, you know, I think it really comes down to knowing you want to make a game, working with a team if you work for a company, and getting it done.
Yeah. Because you got to have the vision, right? And you got to set hard deadlines. And I liked what you said. You said if you keep polishing something, you'll never get it out. And you have to learn when to accept, when to leave stuff in and when to take stuff out, right?
Well, there's the opposite, too. I mean, I think it was Miyamoto that said, like, you can release a game at any point, but if you release it, it's garbage. It's always garbage. And if you wait until it's finished, even if it's delayed, it'll at least come out right. You know, it'll be a thing. That's different today in a service as a games world and stuff, right? But so it's a balance between making it the best it can possibly be versus being practical and actually getting it done. Mm-hmm. Those are at competing odds. And find the balance and do it. Let anything stop you, do it.
What does it take to be a part of the team? What does it take to actually get a job? And what was your internship experience like? How did you start after college?
Interestingly, in my final year at college, I was making the websites for my school, the mobile websites, the dining website, the laundry. So I actually applied for an internship with the company whose software I used to make my college's website. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I didn't actually start in video games. I worked for 3.5 years as an integration consultant. And I was taking the software and I was applying it to all these different colleges and stuff. I actually worked with like Harvard, MIT, Capital One, like a huge, you know, they were my clients, and I built the websites and the campus stuff. And it was cool because it was my first introduction job to programming. I wanted to be a software engineer. It got me to Boston. which is like the Google at the time and probably still kind of is like one of the best places to get a software job in the Northeast. And after 3.5 years, like the job started to suck. And I was like camping one day. I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Like, I went to school to make video games. I just went spent 3.5 years here. I started my career and now I can go apply to a video game place with like a background in software engineering and all that. But I was like, what the hell am I doing? So I ended up applying.
Yeah,
I went applying to different places around me that made video games. And one of them was this company, Demiurge, that I applied to. And I got a job that I didn't even know until I was like working there. But they had just been acquired by Sega. So I actually was working for Sega.
That's
I was working
insane.
For, yeah, I was working for one of their two or maybe three mobile game division companies. Like the we now make the official Sega mobile games for Sega of America. We are Sega of America. So I did that for 5.5 years, which was awesome. That was like a really good start. And after that, I'm in. I apply other places, and I have Sega for 5.5 years. You know,
oh, that as a background, was, forget it.
Exactly. So that was my personal path to how to make video games. Does that answer the question?
That answers it perfectly. And another follow up to that is like, what advice would you give to somebody that's just starting in the field as a designer, developer? They want to be part of this industry. What's some advice that you could tell them?
Do it. Commit to it. Decide it and do it, no matter what. And you got it. I think that's it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If that's what you want to do, then just do that and you'll get it. It's a perfectly valid and acceptable like career that has opportunities in it. You know, that's it. Pick one of the fields, you know, pick art, pick design, pick engineering, stick to that and do it. You know, at least enough to get yourself a job in the thing. You know, a job in the industry. You'll be able to. Yeah.
It has many multiple routes, multiple different ways that you can do this. And that's also pretty fun and pretty exciting within the field, right? Not a lot of fields are like that. They're pretty cutthroat, straight. You want to be a lawyer? This is what you got to do. That's it.
You can do that with engineering in video games. And if you don't end up making video games, you have a good career. You could do it as an artist, become an illustrator or something, someone like a UX whiz, a UI whiz, you know, and make sure you become familiar with some of the game making software like Unity, you know, and then you will have the skills you need to make art. Or if you like designing games, thinking about puzzles and stuff, well, you know, do it. Draw some games on paper, you know, find people on an online forum who are making video games and just volunteer to help them design stuff to get some experience. Download games where you can make your own levels and features and the card games where you can edit card games and toy around with rules and get really good at designing fun. You want to make video game music? Download the software and start now and learn theory and music production skills and like to figure out what part you like contributing to or where's the meaning? What's the part that delights you? How can you delight? What skills do you have? Pick a branch and follow down it. You know, if you like video games, but you will have soft skills, apply as a quality assurance tester. A lot of people start as QA. They don't have any experience at all. And their job is to test the video games and to follow process and format. And then they become familiar with how to make video games. And they find opportunities at their job. And they become a producer. You can even do finance or data science now. It's huge. You know, get a job in data science. And you'll be the people who are taking all the data for games and saying, oh, look, not enough people are sticking around. And that's your job. And like, I know people who make video games that don't play video games. You know, I know people, there's people on our teams who don't even play our game that we're making. You know, there's people who are purely financial or there's all sorts of people and you can be anyone. It doesn't matter who you are. If you like making games and you want to make them, there's opportunities to go do that. So go do it.
What do you think influences you non-gaming related? Like, what do you think influences you the most to do your job?
Influences me? Like what? I mean, that changes, you know, every month. I think, you're driven by different things, but overarching, human beings are obsessed with storytelling because it teaches us, I think, how to act.
Ooh,
tells us what happens in the world and what happens if you do a certain thing in the world, and we learn. It's the same as movies. And it used to be around campfires, you know, and video games are just another, to me, expression of storytelling. And it happens to be the one that I grew up on. And because I found so much meaning in it, I found that I have the skills and I have the desire to contribute that way too. So why shouldn't I be contributing and putting back meaning into the system that I found meaning in?
Oh, you know? Gosh. Oh,
does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that makes complete
right?
sense.
I want to touch people and inspire them and really create compelling meaning in the way that they were to do for me. I can't do that with making film. I can't do that I can do this with this because I have this particular skill set, and I love it. And it's like, even when you're having tough months and tough weeks, you know, I go, I want to leave that behind too. You know, I want to leave that here because I found that here.
Absolutely. This is your way to put out into the world your stories, your things,
something good, something meaningful. Don't we all need a purpose and a meaning? And, you know, yeah.
Oh my gosh. All right. That was awesome, bro.
Sure.
That's like off script. But yeah, getting back to all the topic and stuff, do you see video games differently now, like working on that end?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I do a lot of music too. Like I said, ever since I got FL Studio when I was 15, I've been doing it. I got back into it again recently. And for me, they're the same kind of thing, is to get good at making video games and to get good at music, I have to disassemble them. When I view them, when I listen to them, I have to see, oh, look at that water and look how they made that, the water shine through there. Like, I start thinking about, as an engineer, can I do that? Because that's my craft, my skill. And I start disassembling it. And in some ways, I don't enjoy it the same. And I find that I have the same thing happens with music, too.
Ooh.
Right? I'm disassembling chord changes they did, or the instruments, or the transitions, right? I kind of really like that. I don't do that on purpose with film. I try not to, so that I still have the magic there, you know, and I can get lost in it.
But when it comes to music and games, is different.
Yeah, I think if you are going to commit yourself to making it, you have to also commit yourself to being on the other side of it, which means you can never go back. It's hard sometimes to really get lost in it like you used to be able to, because you're thinking about it differently now. But it's good and bad, you know. I used to play Final Fantasy VII and Earthbound, two of my favorite games, Red Dead Redemption, and go into those worlds and get lost in them and be them. Now I play Fortnite. It's a game that has no, I don't want to say it has no story, because stories evolve out of it and it's awesome, but it has no, you don't get lost in it the same kind of way. It doesn't have that meaning, the storytelling meaning that I always aspired to be, but I get something different out of it now. I find a different sort of relaxation and escape through mindlessness. Through, I don't have to disassemble. I don't have to question or think or remember a story or get lost in it. That it still has this quality, this cathartic, therapeutic quality to it. And I'm still getting something out of video games in a totally different way. Even though I wouldn't have appreciated this game 10 years ago. I wouldn't even told people I played something that has such mass appeal and lack of, in some ways, true artistic. It does. It really does have a deepness to it that I don't think people appreciate. But it doesn't come to mind, though, as like, a piece of art like Final Fantasy VII would be, or Zero Dawn, Horizon, or anything, Legend of Zelda. We think of those as like higher art forms, and secretly underneath, like, Fortnite really kind of is. But it's not the same kind of meaning, the same kind of video game purpose and stuff that I had found in my youth. And it's just interesting. I don't know, that is very interesting.
Yeah, that we could still hone in on that, because for one thing, I mean, you got to give it to Fortnite, man. It has a way of just sucking in people in many different ways. And I've never heard that
phenomenal
before.
Thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you're using it as a different escape rather than, you know, just like where other people, like, because people play it competitively, people play it with their friends, people play it like as a designer, like as an engineer, you're using this game in its own light, in its own way. And you said something too. You said Fortnite is like an art form, and I can't wait to hear about that too, because like, you know, I look at Fortnite and I'm like, yeah, I can't play this game. Like, you know, like I used to play it a little bit, and it's just like, oh, it's just Fortnite. And then saying how it's different from, you know, Final Fantasy, Horizon, Resident Evil, all that stuff. So I also want to hear about that too. Like, what do you think makes Fortnite an art? Like, what's your take on Fortnite since you brought it up?
Yeah, I think that it is a top tier, absolutely highest echelon version of what it is. You cannot create something like Fortnite and do it more so well crafted and designed and polished and thought out and ever changing. It is its own interesting art form, even if it is a, on the surface, shallow, vapid one. But it's this like horizontal game where every single person is uniquely matched, right? And out of it, there's so much depth. It's like chess. Starts out so easy. You just jump in. It seems like a stupid game. But before you know it, months in, you're finding all these super advanced techniques and pulling all these insane moves. And the game always does exactly what you want it to do. It's always your fault if you mess up. It's just like a perfectly, finely crafted thing, like polished and made to be like exact. I could get into all the details of it, but, you know, it's nothing deep in a way, but it's something truly and uniquely special. It absolutely is. what I was trying to say at one point was 10 years ago, I would never have even tried Fortnite. I would be like, that's a kid, the game for kids, and it's got no depth and shallow. I would have been ashamed to admit it even maybe a year ago when I first started playing it. I don't know. We don't have to get into it more. I can write a thesis about you know, how it is the perfect thing. It is the perfect thing of being what it is. I always like to think that Link to the Past for Super Nintendo is one of my favorite video games of all time, right?
Yeah.
And to me, it is not the perfect game. There is no perfect game. It's unique to everybody. But the Link to the Past, to me, is the perfect execution of a video game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's probably like
yes.
the biggest format, right, of that particular genre or whatever it is, right?
Yes. Metal Gear Solid for PlayStation 1. Mm-hmm. I think that is also another good example. And I think that Fortnite also happens to be that. Yeah. And I think that is overlooked. That's all.
No, this day, man, Fortnite is still going. It is top tier. And like I said, I don't play it, but I don't take away from it. I don't take away from what it does.
It's like all I play now. It's weird. You know, I never would have found myself.
Listen, man, I do not blame you, but I really like that you use it in this matter. I've never heard about that. And I bet a lot of people don't.
I make a lot of decisions all day long. You know, I want to go a sandbox and play in a space where if I mess up, my decisions don't matter. I want something I can jump into quickly. I don't have to remember a story. I like that I can play with my friends. I like that it's perfectly responsive and balanced and tuned, and it's always changing. And it's just like perfect for me right now. You know
what I need? No, absolutely. And that's another thing too. Sometimes people just want to get out of work and they don't want this whole deep thing in video games. They just want this.
I want to apply myself more.
Yeah.
I want to go play Fortnite. If I die, who cares?
Who cares? You know,
jump into another game in 30 seconds.
Doesn't matter. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And again,
and my friends are on. We'll joke around.
You got to give that stuff respects. I wanted to go off of that. Like, what do you think is the biggest things that gamers don't understand about, you know, like making games?
No, I have a funny answer for this, and I think about this all the time.
Yeah, go
when we're making video games, people always say, like, but I want all the guns. I want to start with all the abilities.
Yeah.
A lot of people like playing video games and they enjoy them, but there's, like, this fundamental thing of, like, we can't give you all the stuff, and we have to put up these barriers, and that's what makes the game fun, if that makes sense.
Because you have to put up barriers, and you have to put up things to do.
We're going to give you 12 guns in this game, but we're going to peter it out so you get one every hour.
Mm-hmm,
and and to more fun to you would be starting with the game and then shooting and destroying everything, but there's actually no game there. There's, like, you know, by taking stuff away from you, we're making the game, and that's, like, an interesting
thing. Ooh, that's powerful right there.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's something people don't really... The game design aspect is, I think, the most hidden and least understood part of the game making. I think people understand I have to go and technically make it, and people understand people have to go and draw it. But it's a mystery of how the game gets made, how are rules defined, stuff like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what it takes to build the game is that, right? Is the vision, leveling, the time...
Features.
Yeah.
Trying things out, taking them out.
How long do you think that process even takes, man?
Depends on the game. You know, for the last 5.5, 6.5, 7 years, whatever, I've been making mobile games, and they're quicker to make than console or PC games.
Like, how long does it take to make a mobile game versus how long does it take to design and do a console game?
I mean, mobile games generally are quicker because of the format. You know, it's generally like a puzzle game with some meta stuff on top, you know, collections and, you know, leveling up and stuff. And it's usually not as... You know, imagine you were making a 3D game like, you know, Death Stranding or something. I don't know. You'd have to create so many more assets, so much more physics, so much more things to test and larger systems and stuff. And don't get me wrong. Making any video games is probably one of the hardest and most difficult softwares to make. It's like a real-time simulation that has to be fun.
Yeah.
You can't even have a formula for fun, for one. You know?
I know. How do you do that?
You know? And you need so many systems to make the thing responsive and work in real time. Oh. And so mobile games, though, are generally easier in those regards. You know, think about what they are. Usually just a lot of menus, some kind of gameplay, but it's simpler, sometimes two-dimensional. Mm-hmm. So they're just quicker to iterate on, quicker to design, quicker to be like, we want to try a thing, see if it's fun, versus, I don't know, a big AAA production like Grand Theft Auto or something, right?
It's also about like how easy it is for a person to just jump in and start the game. You made a good point too. Like mobile games is mostly menus, right? You just click it and touch it and then that's it. The game goes. You do a couple rounds like Fortnite and then you get off. For Grand Theft Auto, you gotta put the music. You gotta make a whole cinematic scene for an opening. You gotta do the menu music.
3D worlds.
Yeah, you got to build the whole world. Got to build characters, and that takes time.
Fighting physics, exactly. Modeling buildings, all sorts of stuff, right?
Oh my
Testing,
gosh,
huge world. And then you know what? When you try a new thing like a flamethrower, and you got to make sure it works with all these systems in a 3D world, it takes even longer just to try things, to prototype, than it would to be like put a new kind of gem in a Match 3 game.
Yeah.
You know, you can, in a couple hours, you could probably have, you know, something working that showcases what it might be like if you had this gem, and then you try it out. It's fun. You build on it. It sucks. You rip it out. But building maybe something like we want to add airplanes to try them out in Grand Theft Auto. Well, it's going to be 2.5 weeks before you even have a working prototype or something. You know,
that's
it's like
crazy.
It's going to take much longer to iterate. You know?
Yeah, because that changes the whole game, right? Once you start adding stuff.
Yeah, I think I'd heard or read somewhere that the entire weather and snow system in Red Dead Redemption 2. The way it was on the ground, it took someone like a year just to get like that just that one system working, right? They have to hire dozens and dozens of people. They have a team that's only working on a core UI system that all the games share, and it has to work on its own. And then they have a team that's implementing that UI system for Grand Theft Auto, and that's just the UI system. You got driving simulations, physics simulations, input, networking, servers. You know,
gosh.
It's like
no
you know,
wonder
and
they
so,
cost so much to make nowadays.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, it takes years and years to make a AAA production. And it even takes years to make a mobile game sometimes. 2 years before, a year before you have like something that you're soft launching or, you know?
That could also lead into why a lot of the games nowadays are coming out as like these broken mess, you know?
Yes.
And that's
yeah, because why are you going to spend another year developing a game when you've gotten real players into the game and proven that it's not fun and they don't like it?
Yeah.
The game's buggy. You didn't even finish it. People didn't like it. And you've got data that says
people didn't
we
like
should it. Maybe work on a different project. Exactly. This is why the people, you know, I think it's this mentality of get the games to market as soon as you can. And I watch it. This happens in the companies I've worked in.
But that's what
and
I'm
then,
saying.
And then start collecting data. Can we get the numbers higher? Can we get enough users playing? Can we get it generating enough revenue? Can we get it so it's cheap enough to like advertise for users? You know, and a lot of the development is driven by these numbers. Especially mobile games, right? And this is why games get released as early as they can, even when they're not done, so they can start collecting that data, so they can be like, okay, we make these changes real quick, and now, oh, look, we find that people are playing for more days, or people are playing for more hours.
So they're making and designing it as we are playing
yes.
them.
Oh, exactly.
Insane.
Exactly.
Insane, bro. We are like test subjects. We're like, all right.
Which means you're going to get, though, a buggier, incomplete experience. And to me, video games have always been about the story. You play something like Final Fantasy, you do start to finish. I've always had a conflict inside of like, I don't really want to play someone's incomplete vision.
Exactly.
And,
I don't think a lot of us don't.
Yeah. Maybe if it's something multiplayer or something, it's not, you know, that's fine. There's no story or stuff, right? But yeah, a lot of us don't. But it's driven by a market. It's driven by bringing numbers up about generating money. You can't be like, I'm going to make a video game and it's going to be successful. You have to find the fun. So there are risks and creative and studios hire people and fire people all the time because, mm-hmm. you know, projects work and projects don't. So I think, you know, it's evolved that they want to launch stuff out early so that they don't have to have all that risk. You know, they can, as soon as they can start figuring out, is this creative thing fun and do people like it and how can we improve it? And I think it's just a safer business model and evolved out of that. And I get it, but it ends up creating, in some ways, I mean, you choose if you want to do alphas and betas. You don't have to play them, but shoddier, incomplete experiences and stuff. And it's changing. I don't know. Things are changing.
No, but like you said, it's a safer approach, right? It like saves them money because at the end of the day, it's all about the numbers, right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it comes down to hiring people, spending money, and making a game. And whether your goal is to really make art or not, this is going to come down to being a business.
Oh, my gosh. And we can make a whole separate podcast episode on that damn topic, man, because everybody, you know.
Don't get me wrong. I'm happy to have a solid salary and benefits and stuff, right?
Right, because you're in it. You see it happen. You got front row seats.
Hey, if I wanted to, I could go work for a startup and help take the risk on myself and get paid less, but have more control and not run things, you know, and run things differently or whatever. I could do all sorts of, you know, there's options out there.
It's funny you mentioned all these other companies and stuff, right? Who do you think, I have to ask, like, who do you think, in your opinion, is probably like the best game design industry today?
What companies do I think?
Yeah, what
right?
companies do you think?
Awesome?
Yeah.
I mean, I personally always love Nintendo. I know that fans of Nintendo get annoyed with them sometimes. But I don't get annoyed by them. And I've followed along and I think they're a great company. And I really like the quality and caliber of stuff that they do and how they keep stuff. They're almost like the Disney of video games.
You know,
but not as
perfect way
Disney.
To put it.
Perfect
way, yeah.
Right? They're like the standard. For me, I would attain to reach the magic and the fun and the colorfulness and the excitement and the adventure and the polish of Nintendo. That would be like to me the goal, the metric.
That is the
Of course they have unlimited funds and debt and they can polish a thing forever. That's why it comes out like that. But to me that's the highest form of creating the best thing you can, you know, and that's the goal. It's not about running it as a business to me. It's not about just generating money and making more products and having friends and expanding it and the friends having, you know, hiring people and, you know, but it's more about in an idealism world, it's about creating something really magical and amazing and awesome. And I think they do that really well.
Damn,
you know,
that's perfect, bro. You're all right. I'm going to revert back to that topic of, you know, just what it means to be and put stuff out there that really is valuable and really is memorable, because it's too great. You know, it's known in everyone's homes, the word Nintendo, the name Nintendo. Even if you don't know video games, even Spanish people, you know, they're like, oh, go play the Nintendo. You know, they point at your PlayStation.
Especially our generation.
No, you know? Nintendo.
Especially our generation. Like, maybe not so much anymore, but growing up, it was only Nintendo.
Only
you
Nintendo.
Know what I mean?
Exactly. It's the same thing with Disney, like you said.
Your console, your Nintendo, just because parents didn't know what to call it. They called it, go play your Nintendo, even if you had a Sega. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it was back in the day. It was the name for video games.
You know, it still might as well be, because like Nintendo hasn't gone anywhere and they're still strong. They're still, you know, they're still putting out heavy hitters, man.
I mean, PlayStation's a huge name, though, like today. You know, someone might say, go play your PlayStation.
Yeah.
And then go play your Nintendo, you know, or... things are a little different, but yeah. So what were you saying, I guess, in that?
Just saying that, you know, I love your comparison it to Disney, that, you know, it's, that's what we all strive
household
to
name.
Be. Yeah, the household name.
I read somewhere that, I don't know if it was at one point or only in some parts of the world or something, but Mario had become more ubiquitous and commonly known than Mickey Mouse.
That is crazy.
Around the world and stuff, you know?
Yeah, I believe
like,
it.
Like, he's like
I
a more it. Famous mascot. With what maybe it was this generation or something, but that's, you know, that's a changing world, and it shows you the power and importance of video games characters. Oof. You know, their legacy, right?
Oh man, so important. And I want to get into that, like, you know, what do video games ultimately mean to you, and why is video game important, not just for you, right, but for the world, for people listening on this podcast today?
Yeah, and I think I hit on some of this, right? But I think to me, they mean, well, storytelling, for one, which is super important.
Mm-hmm.
I think they mean, you know, for me, they can be an escape, which I find super important. I think a lot of people find things to escape in, movies or books or whatever, right? I think they can be, oh, life's so stressful, and, you know, I'm going to go and play Sea of Thieves and get lost out in the ocean for 2 hours and forget about my stuff. And that's so meaningful and powerful and important for humans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're culturally huge and significant and important. You know, I think people play games, humans, mammals play games to learn. You know, we toy around, we tinker. And I think that life is so hard. You have school, you have jobs, and you have to make the right decisions when it comes to that stuff. You try to, because you want that stuff to work out well, you know. But video games are a safe place where you can mess up. You can go play Fortnite and really give it your best. You can go play Fortnite and try to do stupid stuff. You can't mess around in real life. You can't toy with the rules of having a job and everything is stressful and matters. But I go mess up in Fortnite. I'm like, ha, I messed up. Good. You know, I've been making hard judgments all day. You know?
Yeah.
For some people, they love playing their daily slot games because it's like, you know, a safer, more fun for them to. I don't know, get some kind of gambling thing without spending all their money, or they something to do, you know, on the bus. You know, I don't know. For everyone, it's different. It's clearly here and an important, powerful part of our society and human, another way to tell humans, share human experiences, right?
Yeah, and it has gotten more acceptable in the mainstream media as well, too. There's constantly always articles and people talking about video games, even actors freaking acting in movies that are about video games. You know,
tweeting their favorite video games, you know, their favorite characters in video games.
Exactly.
Growing up, your parents were like, stop playing them, they're not good for you.
Oh,
kids
my
at school
God.
Were like, nerd. Yeah, you know, it wasn't like a common, cool, acceptable thing. It's been fun watching that change.
It's been fun watching that, yeah.
It was, you know, your mom plays video game these days, you know? It's like, everyone plays video games.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Yeah. Absolutely. So beautifully put, man. I have to have your final thoughts on all of this, too, because... This is such a big topic, and a lot of people always have misconceptions about it. They always have misconceptions about video games and the people that work in video games and what they do in their lives. Like, any final thoughts on all that, too? Any final thoughts on how you design and develop and do all of it? Or maybe something that you missed during the podcast that you want to mention?
Be authentic.
Be authentic. There we go.
Yeah, don't be afraid to be challenged and to, you know, like, video games are an everyone thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you like them or disagree with them. They're not about, I don't know. I think video games get caught up in the times. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're supposed to. I think the ones that mean anything to us are the timeless ones, not the ones caught up in the current events of the world. I think video games are meant to be a place away from the events of the world. And I don't like to see people coming and bringing their views or opinions or not accepting anyone else, because the thing that should unite us is this experience, the human life and the importance of video games and teaching us and stuff. And I hate when stuff becomes negative and gets confused with other ideals, you know? And before you know it, people can be ostracized. Yeah. Even people you don't agree with, and that's not okay. And to me, it's about video games, and it's about the art, and it's about being human. And let's keep that in the forefront of our minds, you know?
Oof. I love that, man. Let's keep it, because that's what it's about. It's about bringing us all together, the human
all connection,
the human experience, sharing the
story. Even if you hate them, all of us, you know?
Man. Exactly. And that's what also this podcast is about, too. And I'm so glad that we opened this season with this episode, because it really shows a lot and it really puts a lot into perspective of what it is, what video games are, and the people behind it, and what they mean, and how we experience them and use them in our daily lives. You know, this has been an amazing episode, an awesome, awesome episode. And I can't wait. Maybe we might even do a part two discussing more about it, because there's so much more. I bet there's so much more we could talk about and hit on.
I feel like I just started. Yep.
Exactly. But I really want to end the episode there, starting off season 3 really, really strong. If you guys want to be a part of the Infinite Lives of Games podcast, of course, as always, you guys can DM me, message me on any social media platform except the Twitch, which is twitch.tv/infinite. But you can find us across all the board on Infinite Lives of Games. Instagram usually has the episodes posted up, where you can have a whole conversation with me about the episodes, about what you thought. You can even leave a rating on Instagram if you want to. But check out the main website to do all that. So go and support the podcast, man. This has been James. This has been Seth Infinite Victor on here on Infinite Lives and Games, man. I can't wait to get this episode out. I feel like people are going to resonate with it. And I thank you so much for your story, man. This is your story. It's your knowledge. It can really impact people. Can really encourage them to follow their dreams and follow this path on game design and game development. And it's something that we need more of in this world, especially now that video games have become so mainstream. So much more love and passion are involved in these projects, in these games. This has been Infinite Lives and Games. And as always, guys, I want you guys to stay healthy, stay safe, and of course, stay infinite.